The first night we talked about conditions, conditioned, conditional, unconditional, unconditioned. So life, both in the joy and in the difficulty, we find wants to rub off where I want to live the unconditioned, but according to my conditioning, according to my conditions. So I want to meditate my way. And we forget that meditation calls you. It's the path that loves you first. Something loves you first. And then you begin to love it back. Uh-oh. Gautam Buddha said, that from the ultimate supreme enlightenment, I got nothing, exactly nothing. So in the poem, Rumi is using this phrase, what is it exactly? The pot drips what is in it. Does that make sense to you, the phrase? Drips. So what's in the pot is what can drip out of it. But I think we're kind of coming from the other side. We're sniffing something, and it seems to be hidden from us. And we maybe imagine what it's going to be or what it's going to look like. And we think we have it, and the scent is over there. And we can we give this up to follow the scent? Let's say what we have is we have a scent, a fragrance in our nose. Another wonderful Rumi line, actually. Of the hundreds of times that I lose track, your fragrance calls me back. So we have a scent and we're following the scent. And along the way we're like, oh, the scent, it must be this. This. And we can make our rituals about when and how much. And then we smell that something over there. And we have, can we give up that bottle and go for the scent? What would help me? Let that cost. And this kind of cost happens in all of our conditions, all of our contexts, in our work, in our family, etc., and in our meditation practice. And so it's this singular devotion to the unconditioned that's what we're made of, let's say, and what we're kind of looking for in all of those contexts and conditions. And we think we can impose the conditions. On my terms, I'll meet it. I'll meet you. And then we're the ones who are in love. We're the ones who have the scent in our nose. Does that make sense? Is there any, I should ask another way, because how could someone say no? Is there any question or anything you would like to share or clarify? Or?
Can you maybe say this again, the phrasing?
Yes, the phrasing must change. It's the name of the poem. So I'll try my best and you try your best to fit it to your language also. So this question of what is meditation and why do we meditate? Why do you meditate?
I don't have an answer.
I also don't have an answer. We can come with some answer, but actually somewhere knowing that there may not be an answer as a better answer, can help us start to understand why we forget and what remembering would be like. So it's, if we have the donkey diamond story, remembering was just picking up the rock because we liked it. It was pretty. Or maybe it wasn't pretty. It wasn't cut as a diamond. It was just a rock. Something picked up the rock and was like, cool, let's put it on the donkey. And then what we think we're doing is we're doing laundry to make money, to make a living, to help people or whatever. And someone, what do you do? No, what do you know? No, what do you do? I wash clothes down by the river. What's most important? We wouldn't be able to say what's most important to us, even. But something picked up that diamond. So partly we forget because we think that remembering is going to happen up here, cognitively, in language, in a category, in something that I can refer back to that has any reference point, actually. And there's something lovely about the desert and also this part of the world, where the traditions of this part of the world are all about both, don't make an image of what's most important, which means know the tendency to make images, but at the same time, make it be in everything, every part of your daily life. It can be everywhere. And the tendency to make it be that one face or. And Zuleika is the other way around. So instead of making that one thing signify, that one condition. When I'm on retreat, I can meditate and then it's okay sometimes. We want the conditions. But being on retreat, the conditions hopefully help us have at least a little bit of space sometimes to remember I have a heart. What does that mean, to remember I have a heart? It's not like, it's not a remembering that we can even describe. But the word remembering in English is so good in the sense of like coming back together. Instead of dismembering, remembering. Things come back into place. And they come back into place in a way that has ample place for nothing, for space. So, because we're looking for a reason to meditate, and a cause-effect, a conditionality, like I do this and then I get that, that's why I meditate, and otherwise it's not valid. That's both why we forget, because that conversation doesn't have anything to do with meditation. That's manipulation. And so to trust the voice that you honestly said in front of 50 people, I'm not really sure if I have an answer for that question. I came to the Arava desert to meditate for however many days this is, 600 years. And I am not really sure why. So through experience, we start to grow confidence in what seems to be our vulnerability of not knowing, of not having an answer, of not having a cause and effect that I'm actually interested in. We become less and less interested in a cause and effect thing. I do this, and so I get that. Does that make sense? So partly as we settle down, we get less interested in causing an effect that we recognize as something worthwhile. According to my past experience. Partly that does leave a little bit of room for things shifting into more alignment. And it becomes easier to feel the remembering, the wholeness. But it's fascinating. It's so cool, so helpful, meeting you one-to-one, and also on other retreats, and also between retreats, even on Skype. And I would be you too, like it's not you. But we come to the one-to-one, and I should have something to say, right? And so I talk about maybe what's most noticeable to me, which is often a problem or something special. But it's mostly my problem. Let's say where I don't find Joseph. And then, okay, we can talk about that. And then that only took a few minutes. I brought my torch today. The same person, the same 4 days. It's a completely different phenomena. Oh yeah, and then there was this flow, and oh yeah, and then I remembered from childhood this feeling really at home. And all the important things come out. So it's not also this either or thing, either I forget or I remember, but uncovering that remembering is going on. And letting the conscious mind also enjoy. And getting to know our own inner phrasing and coming to put aside the someone else's phrasing. The water bottle that I thought was where the scent was coming from. I think our culture makes it more likely to forget and to ignore that remembering is also here. And the culture also has this way of making forgetting seem inevitable. Do you know this word? And so in one way that makes things more challenging, in another way the contrast is easier to feel. In a desert, it's easier to see there's a tree, there's a person. Like 3 miles away, I see that person. It stands out. And so it stands out in a way more easily by contrast, that there is something, there is something I love or respond to or something. I can really feel the difference between the living quality and everything else. I just maybe don't trust that I'm allowed to or whatever, to go with that. And really to go with that means that our equipment would respond to really live that. So someone really beautifully said today, here on retreat, I really needed this in only 4 days. I want to live this way. And from fear and alarm, which is forgetting already, from fear and alarm, we could start trying to figure out how we can take the desert home. and take the salad from the family's garden home and take everything home. The full moon setting between the palms on the first morning. And so this sort of confidence, it's not really self-confidence, but confidence that that living quality happens in here. And the love of the living happens here, inside. And so taking that, I want to live this way with you. Not trying to take the conditions with you, but then what are the conditions you need to build the momentum that you're living this way? I find a few things have been and are most helpful, and one is people or a person. We talked the other day about interpersonal regulation. Someone is calm, we feel more calm, more easily. So around those people where you feel your love, or you feel your depth, and you feel your honesty, with that person or those people or that kind of person, whatever, that kind of situation, the person doesn't have to say anything for you to, realize your pretense, and that it gets knocked off, and we're happy to pay that cost. So I think that fear is forgetting is fear, but in the sense of letting fear be the driving force, letting fear be being ruled by fear. So let fear be there, and a practice of not being ruled by it anyway. Even when it takes nearly everything, but then what else? Okay, fear is taking nearly everything, like the wind today. So, but how does it work? I think is fear as forgetting is from fear as a driving force. In Buddhist terms, it's called thirst, tanha, as a driving force. It's the thirst of the fish from yesterday. In Jinshin Jutsu, they talk about fear as false evidence appearing real. F-E-A-R. False evidence appearing real. Appearing real. I don't find any water, the fish in the ocean. I don't find any water. Because I'm so thirsty. So from fear, from alarm, we go into demand. I need meditation according to my rules. And otherwise, I'm not meditating. Otherwise, it's not possible. It's not meditation. It's not sitting. It's not meditation. Who's setting the rules? We're the one who's thirsty. Like, if we could just be like, yeah, I am thirsty. I need water. And we kind of open our system to like, where's the water? Oh. And then I have another Rumi poem today. Thanks to Coleman Barks, the translator. I hope you've heard this one before, and it's short. Today, like every other day. We wake up empty and frightened. So far, so good. Don't open the door to the study and begin reading. Don't look for their phrasing. But how do we find, how do we come to know our inner phrasing? Do you know the word phrasing, our inner language? So not just conditions that I demand to meet the unconditioned upon or through, but the language through which I can find that it is here and I am beloved. Don't open the door to the study and begin reading. Take down a musical instrument. Let the beauty we love be what we do. There are hundreds of ways to kneel and kiss the ground. It's a simple poem that says it. So I didn't tell you, but the first night we talked about the three characteristics of existence. In the Buddhist language, they call it that. But the phrasing must change. We're told that the three sort of facts of how conditions work. When we say conditions of existence, we're talking about conditions. Characteristics of existence, we're talking about conditions, not the unconditioned. One is change. One is that it's unowned. The part doesn't belong to the part. The parts belong to the whole. And one of the strengths in the Buddhist tradition and in Gotama's teachings is he goes so far and he makes sure, okay, let's make sure you know what I mean here. We can kind of get when he says, our perceptions are not mine. My perception is not mine. When the light comes from the light bulb and enters my eye, there's not a point where my name tag gets put on it. It's freely given, freely received. So perceptions, we can kind of like, okay, maybe. That sound. But there's also the way I take that sound. I like it, I don't like it. It pushes such and such a button. It does. There's no escaping that it touches such and such a button. We like it, we don't like it, or we ignore it. When we're in our mechanical mode, which is 99% of the time. It's not only you. So Gotama is pointing out, not just suggesting, also that programming, that machine, is not you and it's not yours. It's not owned. It's not owned. What we think of as being me, my personality, the way I like when you treat me this way and I don't like when you treat me that way and I can't help it, that's not owned. It's, let's say, just like that light is energy moving and influencing energy. The programming the word is sanskar, which is construction or formation. It's so cool, the word. Sanskrit is wonderful. It's not just what has been shaped. So the impressions that have come about through our experience, but how the way that I'm shaped shapes my experience and your experience. The potency of everything And so in a way, what we're left with, when we allow ourselves to have nothing, so like Gotam, he found great happiness by having nothing. And Lucille Clifton's message to the child just born is that through love, what will happen is it will cost you everything. And she didn't say, that is such good news. What she's saying is we're not here to get incrustations and end up with lots of stuff by the end of our life. The more you have, the more you win. The feeling of beauty, we could ask that kind of question that we've been doing most of the days. What happy, unhappy? What does gratitude feel like? What does beauty feel like? What is that experience? Anyone? We may as well pause and ask. And these simple kind of child kindergarten questions. It's a remembering to know what we already know. To trust that other knowing. And to practice knowing that other knowing. Knowing what you already know. We could call it an experience of loving. We could call it an experience of beauty. But the phrasing must change. What is that? What word works for you? What is resonant for you? What is music for you? Yes, thank you. Yes. Yes.
Body.
Yes.
The presentation of the body.
Yes.
Wasn't the body.
Yeah.
So it's strange.
Yeah.
The gap between them and the gap in the knowing and not feeling the body.
Yeah. Forgive me for not being very empathetic with the frustration, but because I feel more the wonderful intelligence in you of and what you're saying, that you can notice the gap and you can notice cognitive body, my imagined body, my remembered body, my made-up experience that I just replace body experience with. And then when there's a flash that's body, and acknowledging how different that is.
Yeah, but I want to ask why.
Yeah. No, that's like a PhD in philosophy question, and I don't have a PhD in philosophy. So, the why, I can make up some answer. But. So we could have fun in the desert for a few days. And again, somewhere else we can meet again. Thank you. So, one reason we might forget, and one reason we might be afraid and alarmed and prefer to create a kind of version virtual world and pretend to live there. Is this intensity and potency of everything, and our sensitivity to it, or just our sensitivity. And so, let's talk about that potency first. I think what we're left with when we kind of recognize that maybe it's unowned, maybe it's not mine or me. And yet, the experience is so vivid. There are traditions, so in India, in Ayurveda, and in some cultures where there may be still some more intelligence than the mainstream. There's a sense of everything as medicine. And how do we come to know that medicine? What is that medicine? We could read some books, but a lot is just by knowing what we know, which takes time. We arrive, but there's a confidence that with time, being in the presence of this, then what name could we even give it anymore? This. What is my experience? In which layers of me, what resonates? So it's not just remembering to know what we know as if it's ready-made there, it's also this tremendous capacity that needs some practice. The furniture needs dusting. It's okay, it's also Joseph. But it can be overwhelming when we notice how much medicine it all has. Everything, the time of day, that sound, the direction of the wind, the smell of the dust in your throat. But little by little, we come alive together, like with all of this. Does that make sense? As we come into knowing what we know, it all comes alive. In inner and outer, coming alive. And it maybe has a rhythm because it is overwhelming, it's so intense. And then again, we need the soothing, the safety, the contact. Put a big blanket on top that's heavy. Get someone to sit on you or whatever. And then the in-breath comes again, and we're okay. Medicine. And so the Buddhist language, not self, anatta, the phrasing needs to change. It can sound then as if, oh, it's just all disembodied or something, not self. But it's actually the opposite. There's space for the aliveness, it's medicine embodied. It's aliveness embodied. It's the unconditioned in conditions. Full of it. The pot is dripping. Okay, so we wake up today like every other day, empty and frightened. So then, okay, what? I received a note with questions to bring here as well that says this very thing. I wake up in the morning empty and frightened. I wake up stressed. I wake up with this compulsive urge that I need to be busy. But I need to be busy with things that are validated by the culture. This person wrote, when I wake up and I do an hour of yoga and 45 minutes of meditation, and I thought, wow, good, nice. But I guess she's feeling that that's busyness. No, she feels that isn't valid. That's her experience, her programming, her conditioning. That's not valid, that's not adult, that's not enough. And she's asking, she wants to be motivated from some other way than the alarm system, than the driving fear. Then finding emptiness frightening. So we find our approach to explore what is that empty, that thing that seems so empty, that seems like a lack. Because we experience ourselves as separate and broken. And then we go from the brokenness and the sense of separation. That's what I mean by going from alarm system and fear. And the fish is thirsty. And instead of letting the thirst take us into the water, we let the thirst take us out of the water. So even I'm thirsty can be Joseph's name, can be the beauty. If we practice letting it open us, we're allowed to have thirst. And the thirst knows water and finds water. We don't even have to do it. That hard practice of non-interference in between the thirst and the water. Okay, so we wake up empty and frightened, and we can feel frightened. It's the name of Joseph. Let's feel it. Where in the body? What kind of thought? It's so lovely to be able to lie down and feel a mind state. Just let it be there. Not good, not bad. Let it be there. And sometimes it's so helpful to give it that label. Okay, I wake up today like every day, empty and frightened. Here's frightened. It kind of is like, shh. Okay, our honesty is able to work. This is frightened. That's all. And then maybe after a while, sometimes I like to say, feeling it in the body, if possible, in whatever way, shape, temperature, movement, the kinds of thoughts, the kinds of rate of the heartbeat, the kind of breathing, the kind of inner atmosphere. What's sort of abandoned and what's overemphasized in your experience of frightened? Not good, not bad. Lying down makes it possible. And there's this lovely phrase from, I think, Stephen Levine. Let's lay it on the sea of softness. Let it float on a sea of softness. On a sea of softness. And then gradually we can lose the name, frightened. And just, that's an energy that we're, it's a human energy, it's not owned. And then we can sometimes it could be like, okay, we wake up empty and frightened and we're about to reach for our list of things to do from frightened. And we just stop the video. And feel inside, what is the actual, like, moving, initiation of the movement? What's the root of fear? I don't mean historically or psychologically, but in the moment, in this experience right now of waking up empty and frightened, where's the kind of source of the movement, the source of the energy, the center of gravity? Getting to the bottom of it. The cost to get to the bottom of it is friendliness in the atmosphere is what's needed. So it means the cost is all of that unfriendliness. All of it.
What do you mean?
When there's unfriendliness, we don't respond in that starting to love it back. We don't have our response. We don't have the pull. We don't feel the fragrance. And when there's some friendliness, we start to just feel, here's the bottom of it. When there's more friendliness, there's less believing the criticism inside. There's less believing the blame. There's less believing that something's wrong with me, whatever. Like, there's less going from there. It's not to say that it's all right, but going from something wrong takes us away from the fragrance, the alarm. What did you want to say?
Why do you call it cost? Why does it cost us?
Because in the poem, it'll cost you everything. It's like my teacher saying, leave your head at the door. All of those heads of blame and criticism that they know in this other kind of way. That they're certain, there's a certainty. There's the demand on my conditions. Meditation is only, it's sitting. Meditation equals sitting. Love equals macaroni. So this is our job, and this in our culture is hard. Harder than I think other times and places. But it's kind of nice, hard. Love, friendliness. I mean, it's seriously hard. It's seriously fiery. It's devastating. But it's like the devastation of love, okay. Accepted. I remember going to one of my teachers who was he was in his 80s, patriarchal. You know, I went to India looking for a strong woman teacher, and I got this patriarchal, tattooed, ex-army, ex-miner, mining guy. I just remember the moment of telling, I feel like I've been hit by a truck. And he just, he tilted his head to one side. He probably handed me a sweet or something. So we're getting to the bottom of it. And mostly what's there is vulnerability at the bottom of it. Or what seems to be vulnerability until we get there. Have you noticed that? It's vulnerability until you get in there, and that's not vulnerability anymore. And so we're talking about resistance. And what helps the resistance be less strong than the love? Or what helps the love Just like not buy into the resistance, not get involved with it, see through it. A chemistry change, and we can just reach through all the resistance in the world and get inside the vulnerability. And it might be still shaky, but it has nothing to defend anymore. And so it's not really vulnerable. It's at least in touch with the unshakable. And doesn't really, it's like, has nothing to lose really, so. Then I just find it's more of a shift from what we thought was vulnerability, and then we get invited in because the atmosphere is friendly. We the chemistry changes, we find our way right through the wall of resistance and we're in. We are vulnerable, okay. And we come into what we are. We thought we were in our bodies all these years, and actually I wasn't. Not really, not like this anyway. And then again. And so I find like a quality change from it, the emphasis being that it's vulnerability to, not really an emphasis, but we can say an emphasis more towards tenderness. And it's sort of tenderness like springtime grass. So soft, so alive. So ready for all that intensity and all that medicine. And so ready for it to be not on my, according to my conditions. Not the deal I'm gonna make. Right? Whatever deal is going on. Everything. The beauty in everything, the Joseph in everything, the music in everything. And including especially the music and the instrument I love playing. Not like communistic everything. Of course.
It's about the cognitive gap that was mentioned. And
the gap between the cognitive and.
And the body experience.
Or the living experience.
The living experience. So it's my third retreat with you, and I often hear people express this extraordinary gratitude and feelings of coming home. And for me, the experience is very much that gap just gets amplified, and it is an extremely unpleasant 6 days or 10 days. My first retreat with you was 10 days. And what it reminds me a lot of is it's a bit like when you've been going after somebody for a while and then you travel with them. And then, you know, where you get your latte and where, you know, where you're going to go for breakfast is gone. And suddenly they're incredibly annoying. And they keep judging everybody and commenting on everything. And there's this running commentary. And most times I've just broken up with that person. And each time I come away from my retreat with you, I want to break up with myself. So there's this, what just happens for me is this very jagged experience of that. Even I can stand in the desert and be commenting on how beautiful it is, how grateful I feel, how it's annoying. Yeah. And I can't shut that narrator off.
Yeah.
Now, I know this is a very well-documented phenomenon, the personality and the living. But to find that tenderness, to access... is it to not break up with that person and go, I'm committed to you, you're annoying, but I'm with you for life, and slowly the more I love you, you'll soften?
I think it could be like, let me just say and then I will. Take a lover that you love. And let that person, if they want to stay around, they can stay around. It's not your problem. And I think, okay, let me repeat the what you said, and but bring me back. Interpersonal. Okay. She hears people, other people, on retreat saying, oh, it was so wonderful, and I feel so grateful, and it's like coming home. And for her, it's a jagged experience, so like this kind of an edge, rough and hard and sharp, broken glass bottle. And most, it's basically because the commentary, the cognitive level, doesn't stop. And so just bearing witness to a gap, but there's not relief. And she said it's like going after someone that you like, and then you start traveling with them, and you realize how awful they are.
When was the stage when she was going after you? Traveling
going out with
already the retreat.
No, going out with, going out in
a... Oh, I thought you said going after.
In a relationship with somebody.
I understand, yeah.
So we go and visit meditation a little bit, and that seems really nice. Then we go on a retreat, and it's like, oh.
Okay.
Where's the silence? Where's my space?
Okay. And the answer was take a lover. Who's the lover?
The lover is whatever you really love. Whatever you really love. This other, so even though this is very occupying, it seems to take up mostly all the bandwidth, the commentary, the negativity, the what a beautiful desert, and the relentlessly practicing yes and what else, or yes and I feel my feet, yes and there's the breath in my lower back. And it really is. It really is, and it really is sensual. And it often really is up here, engaged, occupied, and down here, wide world.
See, I feel that, but the narrator continues, so it's like that annoying.
But so you see, that's not your problem anymore. It's not her problem anymore. So maybe, I don't know if that means breaking up with or just taking under your wing, but knowing that he's not on your level or whatever.
But I'm stuck with him.
You might be. And even if you would be for the rest of your life, but actually you have this secret lover.
You do, it's for sure.
You do. It's absolutely. You would not be living without it. Yeah. It's a fundamental.
You would not be, sorry.
You wouldn't be alive. You would not be here, you would not be alive.
Without the love.
Without the love. Yes. And
the ultimate.
If I were eloquent in your language, I would try to tell you.
Ultimate love.
You thought this was difficult. How it is when something difficult loves you. How it is when you begin to love it back. How it is, or what's the rest of it? How this can cost you everything. So if there's a cost that we have to like have the radio on 24 hours a day, and I want to get rid of that, and I'm sure that I should get rid of that, etc., but I can't. Let the head get knocked off. And yeah. Have you seen the movie Beautiful Mind? Mm. At the end, it's someone who sees people that no one else sees. And at some point, those people tell him to kill his wife. And somehow he comes out of it and he wins a Nobel Prize for his science because he is a genius also. All that's our situations aren't black and white. But and the genius is in where we bring ourselves to where it's not owned and we are vulnerable, but it's more of a tenderness and it's so potent. It's all so potent. And our sensitivity starts to become a responsiveness and not just a jangled, jagged thing. But it's a lot about who I think I am, who I believe myself to be. If I believe myself to be that up here that stuck with that narrator, believe is not the right word. But if I locate myself habitually up here, that's what I have access to. There is so much else that we potentially have access to.
And like,
by practicing, we have access to it. Yes.
You're sure.
I am sure. I'm sure. Yes. And in a way, the obstacles to finding or getting through that access, those obstacles help us find. They help us find the access. Anyway, at the end, just to finish that, I don't remember his name. Anyway, at the end of the movie, he's there to receive his Nobel Prize. And those people are in the foyer with him. Those people that no one else sees. Nash, okay, thank you.
I like him.
Did you? And it's sort of like, it's okay. There's Nash and there's the girl who is 13 always. And there's the guy who's 21 always, and I forget the other character, that are with him in his reality. It doesn't matter if the narrator is with you in the foyer when you receive your Nobel Prize. On the side. And I love that his discovery moment was they never get older. These three people, I think it's three, that he experiences as real, he realized they're not real because they never change. They don't grow older. She's always 13 or whatever, 12 or something. That, in the movie at least, is what I remember, was his leverage to take those three people in a different way. So my response to you is interpersonal, okay. You have a gift. I mean, you have many gifts, and that's a burden to you, probably. But I think you have a gift for sensing the collective, but you've done it alone a lot. You feel it and you design it and you do your magic. And I feel that now you're being called out of that shell to feel it together somehow. I don't know how. That you and others together feel something wider than the three of you or whatever. And so, like, the narrator thing, like, that's... It can be like someone chain smokes, but they're enlightened. Like, what? But whatever. It doesn't mean let's all smoke. But whatever. So just to touch on the third characteristic of existence that we talked about the first night without calling it that, is where we demand on our terms to meet the unconditioned according to my conditioning in certain conditions.
Repeat
Yeah. I'll just finish the sentence though. But is unsatisfactory. So we come to find ourselves in a state of demand, demanding, a state of lack, of thirst. And from that state of lack, I'm lacking. So fill in the blank. Silence. I'm lacking space. I'm lacking body experience, whatever. I demand to meet the unconditioned according to my conditioning in these conditions. Demanding that is unsatisfactory. Demanding to meet the unconditioned according to my conditioning, which means according to my wounding also, coming from a hurt place, I demand medicine, which is an enactment of this yes-no barrier. I'm saying I need this, but I'm blocking it. And when I say, ooh, this hurts, not to show someone or to get something, but I just actually feel that what hurts hurts, is a calling upon medicine. And very often it's already here. There's this glorious rosemary bush growing out of the sewer right in front of my lovely little kuti, kusha, whatever you call it, here. There's the sewer, which just from time to time lets itself be known. The septic tank. Yeah, just there. Just there.
It's not the bottle.
And out of the cracks around, because of course there's water in there and we're in the desert, so of course something's growing out of there. Food, water. The rosemary bush is more intelligent than we are. It's thirsty, it's hungry. Here's some shit and some water. Yum. And it's just... It's a small tree growing out of the sewer, the septic tank or whatever is there. And we could relate to that. We could not notice it. We could say some days, oh, how lovely. We could, and that day that we're like, what is that weed growing out of that? Let's cut that back. And even the fragrance calls us back. Cutting it back, we would be absorbing the oil, the aromatic oils of the rosemary. We're like, oh, I feel so much better after cutting that back. We think by cutting it back, we did the right thing, and now I feel better. And just by being in contact with what is here, when I'm aware of what hurts, hurts, and I'm also aware of what a sweetness is sweet. So this is jagged, and this is spacious. And these are two completely different minds or capacities of mind. This and this. And this is responsive, and this is reactive. And this will not be sustainable or sustaining, and this will. But we don't know how long we're going to hang out with the narrator. And so we might as well say, okay, you're here.
But doesn't the narrator articulate your well being, putting it into words, into substance? You know?
That narrator? No.
For instance.
No.
No? No?
That narrator is. Doesn't the narrator, so let's say, have also a positive role of articulating our experience and ourselves and our soul?
To others, to ourselves.
Yeah.
No?
That narrator? No.
Nothing? No use?
Those words come from down here or come from the narrator in also in love. And then you have, okay, a triangle. Truly. In that way, yes. when the narrator starts to also feel the love and fall for it and serve the unconditioned rather than demand. But do you see the demand is coming from, I feel so weak, I feel so helpless, so I have the right to demand, or I have no other option but to demand. But you don't even have that option to demand. Anyway, it doesn't work. At least we can see that. Okay.
What is love then? Is it unconditioned, the unconditioned?
So, I would say we have to find our phrasing. For me, that would be love is the response or the yes to the fact of what we are, which is interpersonal. We experience I'm here, individual, separate. As long as we limit ourselves to that part of our experience, as we start to practice that I can feel you and you can feel me, we start to realize that our nervous system, or we don't even know what to call it anymore, is not limited to this body, for example. And what do we do with that? We let it change our minds. We let it change our narrative, our concepts. And we are less interested in concepts. When I was in, this will be the end. When I was in maybe ninth grade, such a long time ago, decades ago, we had physics class, and the teacher was teaching us the physics of the day, which is not the physics of this day. And I was like, don't you think that there might be some new discoveries? Like, we're hearing the history of physics that has come to here. He's like, no. We're pretty much, you know, complete here. He really thought that. And that's like us up there with a narrative that poor me. Or whatever. This fragment is me. I'm sure that this is all. That's all there is. Surely, even in that time, which is decades ago, but surely even in that time, already the new physics was happening. Surely. So that teacher is so much like us in the one-to-one where there's just this little fragment. That's all there is. And meanwhile, the rest of us is happening and bubbling and creative, intelligent. Thank you so much for your full-bodied participation and presence. Bon appétit.